everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Biddy, and I'm here with my co-host. Please introduce
Paul
yourself.
Paul Apersonza, otherwise known as the Moo Cow. How's it going, everybody? And this is second attempt, so hopefully this will all work out.
Oh, this will. This will. Don't try to jinx it already. All right, and we've got our special guest. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Kate Phoenix.
Yay. Woo! Kate is back. Kate was Kate was back last season. I think you only did one, and you did one. You did Killer Biker Chicks for that one.
Yes,
for Indie Film Cafe. But we had you for we made that up because we gave you, or Paul gave you What the Fuck Friday, and gave you
Pink Flamingos.
Which is getting a 4K release now.
Yes.
On Criterion?
Mm-hmm.
What? That's awesome.
There you go, Jonathan. You can see the prolapse scene in perfect clarity.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, moving on.
The black hole opens wide.
As Paul says, moving on. All right. So this is actually exciting because this will be our 100th episode on the review site. But technically, it's not the 100th episode. And Paul will be doing the 100th episode. There's a little bit of a mix up. So this is actually the 98th technical one. But yeah, we're calling it
the monkey.
We're calling it the 100th episode. And Paul will explain that in the blog when that comes out, you know, why this was the 100th and what happened, kind of thing like that. So go check the blog when that comes out, probably in a few weeks after this episode airs. Let's kind of, today's episode is the 1991 film called Samurai Cop.
Woohoo. And
I chose that because it's for the 100th episode, we sort of wanted to do a movie that was a little like known, you know. This is very much like a very popular movie. I didn't want to do something nobody had heard of. And so instead of doing this for Patreon, which we actually thought about doing this just for Patreon only, but I thought, let's do it for Indie Film Cafe. We've done Birdemic. We'll do Samurai Cop as well. I think that's sort of fitting. Riff Tracks has covered this, and so is like Red Letter Media and a ton of other people. So we're not the first, but
yeah, this is known as a stinker.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of podcasts about this movie, I'm sure. So,
and not only a stinker, but this is one that is absolutely positively steeped in 80s stuff. So if you like 80s just culture and music and fashion and hairstyles and everything, you're going to love this, because this is 80s, definitely. Even though it was 1991, it definitely has an 80s feel.
I feel like it was made in the 80s, but it wasn't. It was made in... you know, right before 91. So, all right, you guys ready to, before that, we're going to get into some mood music. And we are back. So it sounds good right now. So this is good. This is the beginning of a good podcast. I can't wait for us to all do it. Let's see. First of all, I want to give a little backstory, and I went to looking for it, and let's see if I can pull it up here.
I see a little kitty moving in the background, Miss Kate.
Yes.
Aww. I can hear her too. Or him. Is it him or her?
Her. Her.
Okay.
Hi, kitty.
Her name is Trix.
Yay, aww. Trixie.
Tricks are for kids. So let's see. It is a 1991 direct-to-video action film, written and directed by Amir Shirvan. Amir is an Iranian filmmaker whose credits include Hollywood Cop, Killing American Style, and The Young Rebels, all of which I am pretty sure will be on IFC or Patreon only at some point. Amir was looking for an actor to play the samurai cop, and he found Matt, I guess his alias was Hannon, but his real name, I guess, was Caratus.
Yep.
So, who was a former bodyguard to Sylvester Stallone, everybody.
There you go.
So, you know, that's how he got started. He moved to California. I was listening to the commentary for it, and he was telling some really cool stories. And one of the cool stories was he was working as a bodyguard for, you know, so, well, he wanted to be a bodyguard, and somebody said, you know, Sylvester Stallone's looking for one. So, like, right off the bat, the first person he's, you know, doing, and he actually got to hang out with Robert Zadar on the set of Tango and Cash before, you know, but he didn't really get to spend too much time with them because, you know, work, you know, it was pretty busy. So they didn't get a chance to like talk.
I bet they got to like talk about their both having those massive chins and hair extensions and you know, the whole thing.
Maybe. So let's see. Then they apparently hit it off as a result of Hannon's lack of experience and Chervon's inability to direct. All the combat scenes were choreographed by martial arts expert Gerald Okamura, who I believe is in the movie, if I'm correct.
Yep, yep. He's, his character is in fact named Okamura.
Yep. And he's also in the sequel. So
yep.
I watched some of the sequel, didn't get a chance to finish it. I was like halfway through and it's just, it's gotten too busy. And that movie is awful. And
oh, I know. Will, I know.
That, I,
but it's fun. It's I a lot of love fun.
It. It's fun, but it is awful. It is, and I think it's meant to be that way.
Yes. You know? Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I really hope so. I really hope so.
It's, and it's funny because it's, I almost like it more than this particular one. Almost. Well, it's fun.
We'll probably get into why, but you know, all I saw, and that's the 45 minutes or whatever. Tommy Wiseau was in it for like maybe 5 minutes of what I saw, and he was just yelling the whole time. So,
I mean, he was playing himself, essentially.
Pretty much. Well, he sounded like, you know, in The Room, where he like has that fit at the end where he's like, ah! He starts tearing everything up, and I'm like, where's Lisa? You know, like we need
Samurai her. Cop, you're tearing me apart.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Filming took place over several months, starting in June 1990, when actor Hannon had considered shooting to be finished. He cut his hair short, only to be told that further shooting was to be done. Director Chervon obtained a lady's wig for the actor, which can be seen in several close-ups.
That's my favorite fact about this movie.
Yeah, I think we talked about that the last time for sure.
Yeah.
And I adored that, actually, because after watching the greatest part is, if you guys listen to the commentary, it's great because he actually points out when his wig is, you know, so it was like these close-ups, and I'm like, and he was like, and these close-ups, or you can't see the wig, these close-ups, they were shot. And I was like, oh my God, they're definitely like, very obvious. Like
I was gonna say, you don't need him to tell you when they are.
I know, but like when I first watched it, I probably wasn't looking for that, you know, and everything, but definitely.
Oh, and just so you know, Mr. Moody, in your poster that you've got for your background, Okamura is the guy in the center. Yep.
He's the one that I could headbutt right now. You know,
as you do.
Well, you know, what's funny is he was really kind of, he was a big guy in there. When he got older, he got skinny, and I didn't recognize him in the sequel. You know, I kind of felt bad for saying that, but like
he was in a whole bunch of stuff too. So he's one of those guys who's been in a million different things. He was an actor. He was a stunt guy. He did all kinds of stuff. So yeah, he's definitely been around.
Amir Chervon could not afford lighting to shoot at night, as the entire film was set during the day. I've never noticed that before, really. I never thought about that, but yeah, it's all shot during the day. Chervon also couldn't afford a handful of prop firearms. Actors also wore their own clothes and drove their own cars. Much of the film was shot without sound and done with single takes. That makes a lot of sense, because it does sound like
most indie filmmaking.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, so there are times where And even this, to tell you the truth, for both of you guys both don't know this, but I just watched The Love Spell, what we shot so far. Not the whole thing, but like 6 minutes of it. And there is some like a buzzing noise, you know, that happens through some of it. And I'm hoping we can clear that up. If not, we might have to do ADR, you know, which is a part of fucking filming.
Yeah, but yep. there are filters now that can get rid of that sort of thing, you know, so it shouldn't be too bad.
It shouldn't be too bad, but we'll figure it out, you know. By the way, you did a great job, Kate. I love you.
Oh, thank you.
as always.
As always.
Aww.
But the thing is even, so good. Even the fact that it's indie filmmaking is not going to cover up some of the sins of this particular film. You know, for example, my favorite is still the helicopter scene where, you know, she's up there just like talking like you and I are. Mm-hmm. And he's down there in the bottom, like, you know, hundreds of yards away, not in the helicopter. And they're just talking like they're right next to each other.
And he doesn't have some kind of intercom thing in his ear or earpiece or anything.
There's nothing like that.
Don't you know? He knows, you know, how to communicate through minds.
That's got to be a samurai thing, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, it's already ridiculous enough with the concept of a samurai cop.
Well, it wouldn't be a samurai thing. It would be a ninja thing. That's the Ninja 3 mashup, samurai mashup that we have.
Ninja 3 versus samurai cop. I'd be down that. We just
God,
did that.
Why does that movie not exist?
we come up with some great ideas, and then people apparently don't want to pay for them. We might have to do an Indiegogo to get that going, you know. But that would be cool if we could get the rights to that, you know, both those movies and put them together. You know,
Ninja 3 is my favorite out of those movies.
Oh man, we should have had you. We just did it for What the Fuck Friday. We should have had you back for that.
But the I know, weird, damn it.
The weird ninja magic would explain a lot of the stuff that's going on in the samurai cop movie. It makes no other sense otherwise.
Yeah.
Nope.
So Amir did about 80% of the ADR voices, by the way, not just the ADR. During these ADR sessions, Amir would film much of the necessary pickup shots, all from within his office. This is why many of the inserts of Fraser and Hannon in the film could be seen shot from the same corner of the office, which doesn't match the rest of the film. So that was another thing I loved him pointing out was, I mean, it's obvious, you know, but there's the scene where they walk into the restaurant and then, you know, you see their back, you know, you see their backs. Then when they go to their close-ups, it's a completely entirely different room. And that's because all the close-ups are shot in an office and it looked completely different than the actual restaurant that they were at, you know, but it didn't matter, I guess, because it's low budget filmmaking, you know, guerrilla filmmaking.
At its finest.
It really was. So the other things he talked about in the commentary that I loved was that the hospital was actually a real urgent care that they, and how the director got them is he said that Matt Hannon was the son of Sylvester Stallone and that they were going to shoot the movie. And they said, they just gave them everything. They gave him carte blanche to do whatever they wanted, you know, which I thought was a, you know,
wow.
Which makes sense. Cause if you watch the movie, there's the scene with the blood and cutting up the stuff. Most doctor places would be a little like, what are you doing in there? Like, you know, and they just didn't care. They're just like, yeah, sure. It was a small doctor. It was a small urgent care, if you noticed in the movie. Very small. So, but that was a real place. It wasn't like a set or anything.
With the worst guard ever.
Oh, yeah. The one just like, let's let those two people in. Doesn't even check inside the thing. Well, we'll get into that when we go into the story.
Robert Zadar and his massive chin in there.
So let's talk about these characters real quick. Characters and actors that played them. We did talk about Robert Zadar, and he's a very famous in the B movie world as a Maniac Cop is his thing, you know, his main thing. But he's been in Tango and Cash, tons of other movies. He was in a movie I own called Untitled Horror Comedy. he's been in, I mean, so much. We did Breadline that he's in. I think Indie Film Cafe will have a bunch with him in it, you know, because I think even like Pocket Ninjas, which well, that'll be a one that we're doing later, that comes out later. That Yay. Was, you know, that one had him in it. I mean, he's just everywhere.
You need to see that one, Kate.
What one did you say it was?
Pocket Ninjas.
Pocket Ninja. I'm gonna look this up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a little cray cray. So Matthew Hannon, as I said, was a he wasn't even an actor really. He had done one other thing before this, you know, but his, you know, this Samurai Cop is his claim to fame. Don't know if he's proud of that or not, you know. He was also in an episode of JAG and obviously Samurai Cop 2, and he's got another movie coming out soon called Pandemonic. So I'm guessing it's set during the pandemic and it's a horror film. So, but
either it's an evil like frying pan,
maybe. But it was 2020 that it was made. And it says his credit is TV poem, so I have no idea what that means. If he like reads a poem or something on TV or something, I don't know. Janice Farley played Jennifer, and this is, I believe, her only movie that she's ever done.
I think and so.
This probably turned her off from making other movies. I don't know. Poor girl. Mark Frazier, who played Frank Washington, has been in the sequel as well. But he's also been in Lois and Clark. Once Upon a Time in Mexico, he played in America, he played a pimp, you know, uncredited. So it's probably like just he was in the background as a pimp. So I'm anxious to rewatch that movie and look for him, you know. And then he was in some other stuff. Let's see, Melissa Moore. Which we love her because she was in Vampire Cop.
And she's been in a bunch of stuff.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
That is Donald Farmer's movie.
Mm-hmm.
So okay.
It's an old Donald Farmer movie that we've reviewed and we loved. I mean, it was stinky, but that's what we love, you know. She was also in the Alien Within, mm-hmm. which was Ted Newsom that directed that. The Killing Zone, which is Addison Randall, did that. Into the Sun, and she's been in a few other movies.
She was in Rick Sloan's Vice Academy 2, so we're director from Hobgoblins.
Oh, I nice. Love those movies.
Yeah, and we did Hobgoblins last year, right? Mm-hmm. Was that last year? Yep. So so there you go. She's wonderful. We love her. And then so they have the female henchwoman, and here's the funny thing: her name in here is just Cameron, mm-hmm. and I and there's a couple characters that just have first names in the credits, and they're girls or whatever. Most likely, they never got their last name, and they never got whatever, and they just did the movie and didn't have a contract or. Or whatnot. So there you go.
What I love is if you go to the IMDb, they have characters' names like Arm Losing Henchman and Expendable Black Henchman and Burning Van Driver.
Right.
Although there were two guys really playing Burning Van Driver, as you recall.
Well, and yes. But here's the funny thing about the Burning Van Driver, the actual shoot of the burning scene, the main scene or whatever from it. They were told like last minute, like they drove up, parked their car like they were supposed to. They start getting ready to shoot, and he was like, "So what are we shooting this time?" And the director goes, "Okay, this guy's gonna light himself on fire, and you guys are gonna just put him out. Go." And that's literally what
that makes sense. That's
That's once again guerrilla filmmaking.
Didn't look anything like the other guy, not even close.
Nope. Because he was funny. A different guy. He was the guy who actually burned himself was a guy who does a stunt guy or whatever, who just literally did that scene, got paid and left, you know. So
there you go.
Yeah, like, then, hey.
Let's not forget everybody's favorite Costa Rican waiter.
Oh, yes. He is the best.
Joselito Rescobar.
Yes. So he was in the sequel. I loved him in the sequel. He was a lot of fun. But he was also in Young Rebels, Killing American Style. He worked with, Amir a lot. They must have been friends or something. He was in a movie called Gypsy. And that's pretty much it.
I think he did some producing as well.
You know, it'd be nice to like get him on our show, to interview him.
Joselito, what's going on?
Yeah, he loved it. He loved doing everything of it. You know,
you could tell he was having a lot of fun with his character. He must have said the director either told him to go over the top or the guy just decided to do that with his character, because he made some very interesting choices that I didn't quite expect, but it made it memorable, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, he made some interesting choices, I'm not gonna lie. I liked him a lot. And Holland was the nurse. That's the only other person I'm gonna mention right now before we get into the story of it. But she was the nurse who wanted to check out his package, you know, and everything. And just like randomly. And and the last thing I can share about this stuff is that the guy said, you know, that he, you know, he told the director, like, this is a little weird, you know, like nobody would just do this. And the director goes, it'll be funny, do it. And he's like, all right, you know, like, and it was sort of funny. It was just like, I remember showing it to Jackie and Jackie going, what just happened? Did that just happen? You know, like, and that's sort of what this movie is like, you know, just like, did that just fucking happen? Okay, move on. So let's go into the story. So Kate, do you want to kind of encapsulate sort of the story, like go into more of it?
Yeah. So essentially the movie is about two cops that go after a Yakuza gang, and because they're obviously, they kill people and, you know, they sell drugs, which I feel like is just a very common trope in these types of movies. It's very the Griggs same and Murtaugh thing. Yeah very much so. And I know that was the second one. I'm differentiating between the first and second, but yeah, pretty much it's them going after the Yakuza clan. Yeah. And it ridiculousness ensues. As you can see in his any photo you look up of this movie, like any screenshot. It's just him with his wide eyeballs.
His wide eyeballs and his very wide nostrils.
Yes. Oh my goodness, yes. That's pretty much it. But it's fantastic. Like the movie is just
It's
you
cheese.
Have to give it a chance.
It is honest to God cheese, a block of cheese.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's great. Like, if you're kind of in the mood and you want, like, to get a group of friends together and, I mean, I don't, but other people can partake in alcoholic beverages and, you know, and get together and just watch something really freaking stupid and silly, like, on purpose. You know, like this movie is on purposely kind of silly, you know.
Yeah, this is a greasy pizza and adult beverage kind of flick.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
And I was very glad that Kate loved this movie, that when I asked her, do you want to come on? She was like, yes, absolutely. This is the movie
I've seen it before, right? You knew this.
Yeah, I had seen it. Who released it? I can't remember.
Well, it says Cinema Epoch or something was the producers. I don't know who actually put out the Blu-ray of it or whatever.
Because it was like right after it came out that we watched it.
Because I think it sat around for a while before it finally got a release, as I recall.
As most of these kind of movies do, because especially in the 90s, so 80s, 90s-ish time, we talked about this sort of in Miami Connection, which you're also a big fan of, Kate, right?
Oh, I love that movie so much.
Yeah. So we talked about it before, like that movie sort of sat on the shelf for like a long ass time until somebody, the people at the Alamo Draft House found it. And they're like, you know, we'll put this out, you know, and because, you know, it's so weird. Back in the 80s, these movies were just kind of dying, you know, but then the direct-to-video boom sort of like made it a chance for these movies to come to life. So this was a direct-to-video movie, but it probably didn't do very well until, you know, like Riff Tracks covered it, which they did, and other people had watched it and said, oh my God, you've got to see this crazy movie. This is nuts.
Well, funny, because in the Internet the Moody database, it says that it actually made a box office of 380,000, which is more than I expected, frankly.
Yeah, I feel like, though, like, movies could come out then and be experienced or discovered because there were freaking video rental stores, you know? Absolutely. Nowadays, everything's online. And
everything's streaming.
Pick up the weird, you know, case cover that you found, you know?
Sure. And that was the thing. We've talked about this before. Every Ma and Pa video store had this. You would go there, you'd rent it for $2.99, and you'd have it for a couple days. And
you watched it because you paid that $2.99. You didn't start it and stop it. You freaking watched it because you invested the money.
And the time.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, we still invest time and money into these movies because we still buy them. You know,
well, yeah, but with streaming services nowadays, not to be, you know, super anti-streaming in that spiel, blah blah blah, but you know, people, I feel like the discovering of movies is different now because you don't pick it just by the beautiful cover that you see in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, that's the good thing and the bad thing about the internet. The good thing is you can do all the research before you get anything. The bad thing is that, you know, just like you're saying, you don't really own it, which is why I don't like streaming. You know, when you have the physical media, and I don't want to get into this topic because, you know, I'll yap forever about it, but I prefer having the disc.
And I'll admit to that too, and I'll just say this and then we can move on from the streaming thing. But I completely agree, because the problem with streaming is that sometimes the rights go away and leave and then go to another service or something that you might not be paying for. So then you lose it.
What you can watch.
Right. Now, what I will say about streaming that is good, and again, I'll leave the topic alone, is that I can preview. I can look at a movie and say, hey, this looks like a stinky movie or a good movie. I'll watch it and then I'll be like, God, this is great, or this is terrible. I want it. So now I'll go off and I'll buy it because I've already seen it and it's already passed whatever stinky test I'm trying to give it. And it's not, you know, I don't have to buy or spend $20 on a disc and not know. I'll know ahead of time.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree 100%. And that's what I like about it. And also I like we do multiple shows. So sometimes having a movie like that, and then I can show people through streaming instead of having them have to go buy the movie, is a lot easier when we're doing our podcast. So yeah.
Plus it's always more fun, in my opinion, when we're all together and we can just sit on the couch and have some snacks and watch the movie together. I mean, I know we couldn't do that for distance reasons now, but you know, it was fun when we got to do Pink Flamingos together. It's a different feeling, you know.
Maybe not as much fun for Killer Biker Chicks for Kate.
No, that was really boring. I just kept looking at the freaking clock.
And then you're like,
and there was no internet or signal, so I couldn't like sit there and doom scroll on my phone.
Paul did that on purpose. He scrambled everybody's phones.
It wasn't my fault. But next time you come up, Kate, we got a movie for you called Miss Werewolf that Jonathan can't wait to sit through again.
No. Oh, no, well, don't do it. Don't do it.
We have some movies we're going to make him sit through for the first time.
That's true. So. You got plenty of stuff to do next time you come out. So
I know. Right. I'm breaking my I will never watch these movies again rule for you.
Outstanding.
And I'm breaking my I was never going to watch these movies at all for you. So there you
go.
Make
this happen.
Yes. So anyway, back to Samurai Cop, which we always go on off on these little tangents. Where's Jen when we need her to kind of.
Hey, man, we are not Riff Tracks. We're not Misty. We do our own thing.
Yep, that's true. We do our own thing. We don't necessarily keep track of the movie. I guess you said a good amount of the story, but let's see. What were your guys' favorite scenes in this movie? I'm trying to remember mine. And so, Kate, what was your favorite scene?
This is really dumb, but going back to the whole wig thing, when you first see him walk out with his cheesy ass wig, I don't know why it made me laugh really hard the first time I saw it. So it just kind of stuck with me.
It's a ridiculous wig.
It is a ridiculous wig.
And I remember thinking, like, I just remember laughing and going, I'm pretty sure that's a wig, but I'm really confused because he didn't have a wig before and now he has a wig now.
Can you say you were wigging out?
Yeah. Yeah, the Wiggins.
Pretty good.
I know. I've been getting like very punny, and I think it's because of Paul.
I was gonna say I fully blame Paul for that.
That 100%. Is a bald face pun there, my friend.
All right. So the wig was completely crazy, and I would completely agree seeing it on him, just like because it's a woman's wig. You know, it's not a man's wig at all.
Flowy. Although his hair is very flowy too. Like he's got like whooshy hair.
And it's got a lot of split ends. I would have thought with a women's wig that it would have been a little bit more kempt.
Well, it's probably because, I'm looking at IMDb and there's a photo of him when he's holding the guy's head.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, okay, so from experience, as someone who has worn a wig on a film set, those things get nasty. No one takes care of them. Like, American Guinea Pig, it was covered in blood and was left. And we had to, like, wring it out.
Eek.
It was gross. So I understand how they can get really, like, gross looking.
There you go.
All right. So, Paul, what was your favorite scene?
I would have to say probably the first real long chase scene, because the editing was so bad. The editing was like they took a bunch of things and just tossed it in a blender and hit puree. You had no idea where the hell they were going, because every time you saw a shot, there was something different in the background. I'm like, wait, weren't there mountains there just now? And now there's like an ocean now, and now there's something else in the background. Where the hell are these people? So it's like they filmed different things in different days and different places, and then edited in such ways to try to make it look like a chase scene, but it really wasn't. And it just completely removed any grounding that you had. And it was just very weird. It's one of the worst examples of editing, for at least especially for a chase scene that I've just about seen. It was really bad. Terrible editing.
Yeah. That just all of that, just all the chase scenes pretty much just were ridiculous, you know, at times. So I admit, like, and apparently he was the driver, right? The whole time, Matt, you know, and so he's driving around and doing everything, and his buddy Mark, you know, or whatever the actor next to him was like almost wanting to puke, because it was like he got so nauseous and car sick from driving, because like they had to literally keep doing it, you know, and everything was crazy. So yeah, I agree. I'm gonna have to say my favorite scenes are in the hospital. Like every single my favorite scenes are the hospital. Like I just everything that happened in the hospital, from them coming in to the hospital to and then talking with that nurse, and the looks that the partner had, like the big like, you know, eyeballs popping out or what?
Oh yeah, that like, he does it in part two as well. Like he breaks the.
I saw that.
Yeah. You know?
I saw that because I was laughing my ass off. I was waiting for, I think that's why he did it, because that's what people remembered from him, was him making all these facial expressions and stuff. And but in the sequel, he actually gets a girl. So I was like, good. Thank you. You know, they were nice. Cause like the first movie, he didn't even get like any kind of play at all. Like he was just going through it with the guy. So I bet that was in his contract. you know, I'll come back.
to get a chick in the second movie.
Right, yeah, because, you know, the other guy's like, you know, getting these girls, and all pretty much every girl in that movie was like, you know, a adult film actress, I think.
Biling, baby.
Except for Biling.
That's right, yeah.
That's for, except for Biling, but her drunkenness was hilarious, just the best part of that movie. So I love that. I love the hospital scenes. I loved them leaving and punching everybody and just, it was just so over the top ridiculous. Those were my favorite scenes.
I always loved the completely worthless guard in the hospital. Just like the worst guard of all time. It was so bad.
Oh shit. Oh my God. He's, you know, taking, you know, like he was terrible. I agree. And worthless. And, all of them sort of, even the cops, all the cops are worthless, you know, like, just like,
except for Samurai Cop.
That's right.
That's right.
And his partner.
And maybe Melissa Moore in it was a little like, she was good, but her line saying to the other cop, you know, do you want to go have sex right now or something?
Comes out of nowhere. I guess it's supposed to establish her character, but my God, that's like establishing it with a ball peen hammer. Subtle much?
Yeah, her character was just, she seemed to have fun with that role, you know, just like, you know, whatever, like I'm gonna play this to the, you know.
Not that different than a lot of other characters that Melissa Moore has played in her career. She always gets to play the sex pot, and you know, that's, what are you gonna do? I mean, that's what you do.
Well, you know, and Matt had a good thing when he was talking in the commentary about, he did not like the sex scene between him and her because he understood it. You know, he understood that it was to sell and everything. But he's like, why would my character like all of a sudden fall in love with this girl, the Jennifer character, if he's just like this womanizer who just messes, you know, like there was no like establishment of like, I'm going to be a one person, you know, whatever.
And let's not forget the fact that his place, if you remember, was so grandma-y. There's like so many grandma things in the background.
Oh God, I forgot about
it. It's like, yeah. Oh my God. She should be like, who the hell decorated? Are you living in your grandmother's house?
Who do you live with? In
bed? This is gross.
Are you sure you aren't married? By the way, did you see I changed my background?
I did. Yes. I started laughing when I saw it.
His beautiful ugly wig.
Yes, his beautiful ugly wig. I absolutely love that. I want that wig. I wonder if he still has it.
I'm sure it's probably deteriorated somewhere.
I'm sure it's stinky wig at this point. You know,
I'm pretty sure they didn't keep it in great condition after.
Or, you know, maybe he fell in love with his wig and he talks to it and he strokes it and he takes it to bed and holds it close to him and whispers sweet nothings into the wig.
That's, I mean, who knows? This movie was made, so anything's possible.
This movie exists, so anything in the world is possible at this point.
I love you.
I agree. That's the movie you want to make, Paul.
It is the movie I want to make.
You know, like you want a character just to be like loving their wig that they take it home and start talking to it. Like that would be your thing, you know. Yes.
But it would be a movie about a killer wig. Like that would be rad.
Right, and it has to be Matthew Carradine. I mean, that would make it awesome.
Have they done a movie about a killer wig yet?
They have done Killer Hair Extensions. That's a Japanese movie. I have it.
Killer Hair. Is that what it's called?
It's all, yep, and it's on my list. We just haven't gotten to it yet, but it's, believe me, it's on my list. I've got it.
Oh my God. There's just some things like, I'm just, after a while, I'm like, I don't know. Like, because there's, you know, when movies like this exist, you know that like people are just trying to find the, you know, because that,
I've got
this,
killer bed, I've got killer backpack, I've got killer donuts, I've got killer hair extensions. I'm telling you, man, my list is huge.
Yes.
Oh, there's a movie called Hell to Pay, but it's to pay. Oh my God.
Yes.
Okay, so I literally, like, I'm on some message board trying to now find Killer Wig
movies. Yes.
Well, there you go. Hell to Pay. I want to see
it
that.
It was from Amazing Stories, the TV show.
Oh, okay. So it was a TV show episode.
There you go.
Yeah, but it was like, they were like.
There's our next Indie Film Cafe show, a killer wig show. Flip Your Wig with IFC.
Flip Your Wig. Yeah. Don't wig out. I would love that though. But I bet Kate would do that movie. Would do a movie with about a killer wig.
Oh hell yeah! I would do a movie about most anything, because I love film. But a killer wig would, you know, if someone wants to make it, I will gladly participate, be a part of that movie.
Mm-hmm. Call Kate. You know, set it up.
There you go.
we won't make it because we got way too many other things. Things going on right now though, we just don't have time, but you know, unless it's a short or something for another Screen Queen Campfire or
you
whatever,
know,
but
I've got a whole bunch of ideas for a bunch of silly movies, so
yeah, so I mean we got plenty, you know.
You should just make an anthology movie with a bunch of dumb ideas.
I'm telling you,
that's Paul for you. You should talk to Paul, get him
Paul,
going.
We'll team up.
Yes, you
we'll
guys do that. I'm down to like help, you know, make it, but I'm, you know, I need like I have too much shit going on, and Paul knows this and you know this because you work with us, so you know all the shit, so but yeah, so anyway, to go back to this killer wig movie here, where I want to talk a little bit more about, like, so his direction, Amir Shirvan's direction, was pretty like guerrilla style filmmaking. You know, he was very much like, if they got kicked out of a place, he just didn't insert, you know, in his office, as was said. So he didn't really care as long as he got the shots done. You know, I mean, he put a freaking wig on something. He just literally did not care as long as he got the movie done. And mm-hmm. I actually give him a lot of credit for that, you know.
My feeling, and I may be wrong about this, but my feeling is the only reason this movie is called Samurai Cop and not Ninja Cop, because we've had this discussion how this probably should have been Ninja Cop, is because somewhere along the line they had this prop sword that happens to be a samurai sword. If it weren't for that prop, I'm willing to bet this would have been Ninja Cop. And that's what this would have been.
Samurai Cop sounds so much cooler. Like Samurai Cop, like Ninja Cop, Samurai Cop.
Ninja Cop versus Samurai Cop. There's a movie that needs to be made.
Yep. Or RoboCop versus Samurai Cop. That would be a good one too.
Oh, there you go.
Or Robo Chick versus Samurai Cop.
Horror movies should have their own what if.
That's like, that's cool. Yeah, like the Marvel does their what if,
yeah,
you know, thing.
Yeah,
that would be really fun.
Have their own.
Yeah,
what if somebody made a you know, Ninja Cop versus Samurai
or,
Cop,
you know. If I had the kind of skills that would do, say, you know, animation, you could take, you know, Samurai Cop and put him up against Robo Ninja as kind of like a little cartoon, see who would win.
Well, they used to like do that stuff. What was that called?
It epic rap battles in history, that kind of a thing.
Well, yeah, but there was like one where they did like animated, and I can't remember what it's called.
Celebrity Deathmatch? They did those.
No, it was another one. But it's same lines.
They would do things like Jason versus Michael Myers and that kind of stuff. But I'd rather do Stinky Movie Icon versus Stinky Movie Icon. That's more fun.
Or Robot Chicken used to do a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's awesome. I would love to see stuff like that. But unfortunately, we don't have that stuff right now unless Seth Green creates another Robot Chicken.
I am not skilled when it comes to, like, creating stuff like that. I can write, but anything else, I'm like... Nope. Anything
imagine,
visual.
Imagine Roller Gator versus Torgo. That would be so awesome.
Yeah, Kate, you haven't seen Roller Gator, have you?
No.
Oh my God, Kate, I can't wait to show you Roller Gator.
Yeah. Paul's wishing you lived like by us so you could
every
just come over and watch.
Every day, pretty much. Every time we see a movie, I'm like, I wish Kate was here. She'd enjoy this so much.
Yeah, because you know how much I love just crap movies. Oh my God, this looks amazing. It's so cute looking.
Oh, Roller Gator?
Yes, he's adorable.
That's wonderful.
Oh, look at him. Does he have tiny legs?
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does. Oh my God. Yes, he's made out of plastic. He's molded it in one piece, and that's it.
And he raps. He's a rapid navigator.
Has this, like, where is this released?
Please tell me you'll watch this with us.
Yeah, we have it.
Look at that beautiful 1.3 out of 10 rating. It's lower than Pocket Ninjas.
Oh, yeah. But it's so much fun. And Conrad Brooks is in it.
Well, and he's not in Pocket Ninja, but he, what is it?
Same director.
Same director, Donald G. Jackson, well, did both.
Half.
He did half of Pocket Ninjas.
Before he got fired.
So I love Google because it's like movies that are similar. Guess what movie is similar?
Baby Ghost.
Baby Ghost and Pocket Ninjas. So just making that return.
Same
right
director.
Back
and we have
but so is
Little Lost Sea Serpent.
Welcome to Frogtown.
Same director.
Hell Comes to Frogtown. Yep.
Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Donald G. Jackson.
Yeah, Donald G. Jackson did that. He also did Rollerblade and was the Rollerblade 7. You know, he's a Rollerblade guy. You like Rollerblade.
I have so many movies I could show you.
I know. We did.
I want to see this movie, Baby Ghost, because it looks like a weird ass line.
Oh, it is. We did our
We covered it.
Third season. And when we were in LA, we covered that, and it was silly but fun.
And it's got a boppy tune to open up the movie.
It's got a really good theme song to it. So definitely check that out if you get a chance to watch it. It's on like Amazon, I think, for like $2 or whatever. It's definitely a good rent.
Next time you come visit, in addition to the other movies, we'll get you caught up on the Donald G. Jackson world because I got them all.
Yeah. You'll have to watch all of them because they are so bad, but fun.
Just,
you know?
it's like those chips that you can't just eat one. You're just going to keep one in the movie.
Yes. You're going to go down that rabbit hole. Or that roller gator hole. To go back to this, so the direction was pretty, crazy. The other things that I want to talk about, I guess, are, did you guys really notice much of the music? I mean, was the music a part of your feelings to this movie?
Yeah, pretty standard, pretty par for the course.
Yeah, I don't even remember much of the music. The writing was silly. I almost feel like the way that he was describing it, it almost didn't sound like there was an actual script, you know? I feel like it was in the, as if we could want to go back to Donald G. Jackson, the Zen filmmaking thing of like, just get it done and just, you know, kind of make it right. Sort of thing. And so that's probably the case. Cinematography was okay. Like there was nothing, there's nothing wrong with the cinematography as far as like nothing was out of place or
it was
shot
just poorly edited.
Yeah. The cinematography was okay. The editing was bad. That was probably also done by Mir, I would guess. A lot of the times, director.
The other thing that kind of annoyed me is Cranston Kimura, who's the guy who plays Fujiyama, the sort of head bad guy. He's just like, he was just not believable as like an evil character. He was so thin and spindly and older. Like, why doesn't anybody just push him away? He's so just so underwhelming.
By the way, guess what? He was not an actor.
Oh, you know? Really?
Yeah, they found him at the Glendale Mall.
Just wandering around?
Yeah, he was just go shopping. And they said, Amir came up to him and said, do you want to play the bad guy or whatever?
Oh, I see. So the first Asian he saw, basically.
Probably.
Wow.
You could play a Japanese crime lord.
He looks like a Japanese crime lord.
No, he does not. He looks like a Japanese toy salesman.
Wow, way to stereotype it and profile there, huh?
Yeah.
But by the way, the movie was edited by Amir and this guy named Ruben Zadurian, who also edited movies like Hollywood Cop and Young Rebels.
The movie's also done by Amir.
Yeah.
So they work together, I guess. And
so when you mean edited, you mean they took the scenes, they ground them up, they put them in a shotgun, and then they fired the shotgun against the wall.
Yep.
Pretty much. That's how that it got edited. So I guess
I love how your poster is supposed to have all these little bits and pieces, and it's got all this naked chicks with boobage.
That's not, all I keep seeing anytime he's.
I know, and there's not that much of that has happened, and then the weird helicopter thing. But otherwise, you do see, you know, samurai cop with his giant flaring nostrils wide open, and that's really the indelible image I'll take from this film.
Yeah, pretty much. What is it? There was some, you know, there was some a little bit of nudity. There was a little sex. You know, remember the. What's his name? The Okamura or something was his name. I'm trying to say his name.
Yeah, Okamura was.
Okamura, I think.
Guy with the goatee beard.
Yeah, and he was like, I think he was like having sex with a girl or whatever, and they were like gonna walk in on him, and they're almost like, oh, we should let him finish this. This will be his last, you know. His last bang, and then they came in and he like left or whatever. There was the
one guy, the older cop, the one that Melissa Moore's character is like, so you want to have sex? I guess his wife, remember they go to kill him, and then his wife's there and they go to kill her, but they can't kill her before they take her robe off and blah 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 blah.
Once again, for, I guess, to sell this movie, you know, I don't even know if they really needed that or anything. It didn't need any of the stuff, but you know what? I mean, it put it in there. So, you know, I mean, whatever. It didn't bother me, but it didn't, that part did sort of, because it just felt like, why the fuck did that just happen? You know, like it just was weird, but yeah. So yeah, there's those things, and I don't know, was there much there? So there wasn't much else like sexy stuff, and I don't think the other girl, the lead girl, the girl who played Jennifer, did anything, you know. So they wanted to keep that, I guess, clean.
Plus, yeah, but she had to kiss Nostril Man, so there was that.
Yeah,
they didn't really seem to have much by way of chemistry. Although I have to admit, I thought her acting was not bad. And I'm kind of surprised that this is her one and only thing. I thought she was pretty good, frankly.
Yeah, I thought she was a pretty decent actress. And honestly, it was weird to see in the sequel that she was being played by Caden Cross or whatever, because like, obviously they didn't really look alike, I didn't think, you know, like you know, you could definitely tell the difference between one or the other. But I sort of wished that she had come back, but I guess she probably couldn't find her, you know, like she had moved
could
on.
Very well be. I don't know.
But Melissa Moore came back for the sequel. So we can talk about that, the legacy of Samurai Cop now, and the fact that it's actually done a sequel that has Tommy Wiseau and a bunch of adult film actors and Biling in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, from what I saw, it was worse than this in a way, but on purpose. So it like it knew what it was, you know, like it knew.
Yeah,
this was
it kind of reminded me a little bit of Birdemic 2, you know, where Birdemic first one was really, 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 really bad. They didn't quite think it was going to be, but it was. And then the second time out, they're like, well, we already know what we've made, so let's just kind of go for it and you know, be bad on purpose, and you know, maybe people will, you know, will give us a little bit more respect that way, you know.
Yeah, but then sometimes it felt like, I don't know if the acting was on purposely bad, but or it was just bad, you know. So I don't know, and that's what it was with this movie. Is I don't know if some of it was sort of told.
I think it was just bad.
Yeah,
because what Matt said in the commentary too, was that he would listen to the director sometimes tell him specifically how to say things. So there were times when he was yelling at the audience, like at a person or something, and he would normally not do the line that way, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever. But the director told him to do it that way, so he just, you know, did it the way.
Like
the
in the chase scene, drive, drive, drive.
Exactly. he was not a fan of that. He wasn't a fan of like randomly driving or not randomly yelling, you know. Well, I guess it's at that time right now for our to do our stinkometer. And I don't remember what I gave it the last time. And so, and neither do you, I don't think. Do you, Paul?
I kind of sort of do, but I mean, I know where I'm going to score it.
Okay. And I do too. What about you, Kate? Do you remember what you scored or do you?
No.
That was so long ago, it feels like.
I know. Yes. That's okay. But just for everybody's sake, the stinkometer is the score that we use when we add up scores from 1 to 10 from three of our hosts. And the lower the score, the better the film is, which means the higher the number, the stinkier the film is. And if you feel subtle, you can give it a half step, a 4.5, 5.5, that kind of a thing. And then we total up that score, and then we find out what was the stinkiest movie of the season. And it's already been a season full of stink.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
It's been pretty stinky so far.
Can this film top Turkish Star Wars? We'll have to see.
Nothing can top that movie because it'd have to tie with that movie. You know, that movie was a 30. So, So, I'm going to get off the right, start off the bat, and I'm going to send 8.5 because after rewatching it, it's bad, but it's not, to me, it's not like it's not, Neil Breen bad, you know, like it's not that. And those are like a little, even a little bit more fun. This is like, they tried to do a real movie and it just didn't work out, but they really tried. And so there's some good charm to it. So I'm going to give it an 8.5. What about you, Kate?
Sorry, I got distracted because you said Turkish Star Wars. So I had to look this up and it looks amazing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm telling you, I have so many movies to show you.
Wait, oh, so now I'm backwards. You said the lower the score, the better the movie is?
Right. Yes, and the higher the score, the stinkier it is.
Now, better as in production and you know.
Yeah, you so know. I'll give it a 6 then. Because okay. I really enjoy this movie, okay. And I think they tried their best.
That's fair. That's a good score. What about you, Paul?
Yeah, bless their little hearts, as they would say here in Virginia. They tried and they failed. It's pretty bad. It's especially the editing and a lot of the production stuff was just awful. We have seen worse, however. So I think last time I gave it either a 9 or an 8, but I think 8.5 sounds fair. That's a good score.
I think I might have given it a 9 as well the last time. And the more I watch this movie, I think the lower I'm gonna go. You know, especially the more Paul shows me movies. So maybe, the lower I go.
I had to give it a little lower step too. Not as low as Kate, because I don't know if I enjoyed it quite as much as Kate. But
maybe one day I'll get as low as Kate the more I watch it. So I don't know. I don't think it could ever get lower than a 6, you know. So I think 6 is a perfect.
I'm a sucker though for really crappy movies. Like I quite enjoy just garbage movies.
It's the worst. She loves
that's what it is. Yeah, I'm a sucker for like crap movies. I think they're fun.
By the way, Kate, mm-hmm. where you are right now looks like you are wearing the wig.
I've been like slightly positioning my head like,
well, if we had just been right smarter for a time. If we had been smarter for it, we could have all showed up on Zoom wearing wigs.
That would have been amazing.
I just bought my onesie recently, so give me a break.
We can have an IFC wig party. We can do this. Make this happen.
I know you got your onesie on. That's cute.
We can absolutely have a wig party. That would be awesome.
So we're gonna do a onesie party, then a wig party. All right.
Sounds good.
We're doing so many parties right now that we're planning.
Okay.
So thank you so much, Kate, for this, like, for coming on a second time, like, and we made it through.
I know. Woo! And I thought Moody was jumping in at the beginning. So.
Oh, I'm so glad that it just messed up in the beginning. That's it. Like right at that thing, I was like, oh god. I got back and I came back in, and the first thing Kate says is, "We're not doing this another time."
And it's funny because, like, season one, we were having problems with some of our technical stuff because we were just kind of learning all these things. And there were one or two shows where we had to go back and redo things because we thought we were recording and we weren't. And you can just kind of hear it in our voice. We're kind of tired. We're like, oh man, we just watched this movie and we did a whole podcast. And now we got to do the whole podcast again.
Which meant we had to watch the movie again and then do the podcast. That's how it was.
So, and it was like, usually the same day. So it was just exhausting.
It was exhausting. Or they'll come back then like another day or something. But the first season was really rough because we were using the Podbean app, you know, to record. Instead of the phone, we're using my phone to record instead of
how Moon's phone is. It's blown up by messages and phone calls and shit constantly.
Yep.
True.
Yep. But that's what kind of affects us when we shoot sometimes when we do the videos. So, you know, somebody might call me or something and ruins it. So, but anyway, I'm very glad nothing got ruined this time. It got made, it got done. Paul sounded perfect because the last time I could tell that there were sound issues, and I was like, oh god, I hope that doesn't happen when we do the thing. But yeah, I could hear it. So now it sounded clear. Everything sounded great. Apparently I probably didn't sound so good when I walked, you know, went to look up stuff, but I think you guys could hear me pretty well. It's just probably low when I was talking. So I just want to say thank you once again, Kate. And we really, really can't wait to have you come back.
I'm excited.
We are planning to have you come back. And we're going to have a day where you go out to Busch Gardens with me and stuff. So
yeah, so we can actually ride stuff this time. Hopefully there's no bees.
Yeah. Well, I think, there shouldn't be any, you know, when we have you come out again. But if it's in summer... Which should be, like, that sounds like the time, you know, but apparently summer, they never have bees. That was the only time that's ever happened in the history of me going there, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, great.
Freaking bees.
The day that freaking Kate wants to come and check these, one of the best rides out. I love that ride too. I was bummed.
So what happened? There were bees?
So there's literally signs everywhere that says certain rides are closed because the tall rides, for some reason, the bees are attracted to them and they don't want to injure the bees or people.
Well, it's better than that than the day that they were test riding the one that you can ride. They test rode it and Fabio was going up and he got hit by a goose.
Yeah.
The goose literally like banged into his nose and shit. So yeah, you know, that's a good thing that's never happened again.
Maybe it's just like a haphazard park.
Goose one, Fabio zero.
I don't know. I maybe, you know, just it's that, you know, it's Williamsburg for you, I guess.
I mean, it's right next to the Anheuser-Busch. So it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the critters get into the beer and they all get drunk and they want to come over and cause havoc over at the amusement park.
Of course.
Yeah, but drunk critters. That sounds wonderful. Once again, another movie I feel like you'd want to make, Paul.
Oh yeah.
Yes, drunk critters.
I just feel like Critters itself, like the movie Critters, with being drunk and stuff, would be fun to watch that happen, you know. But anyway, we're giving ideas. We're throwing out ideas to Hollywood right now that, you know, we shouldn't be doing because we're not going to get paid for it.
Not going to be Hollywood. Nobody in Hollywood's going to do this.
I'm copywriting Drunk Critters right now.
There you go.
There you go. And you see, we were actually talking about one day remaking or doing something with Roller Gator because we actually know the producer of it. But unfortunately, he said we could. Problem is, he doesn't have like the Roller Gator stuff anymore, so we'd have to buy it.
Is gone.
Yeah, all that.
Well,
stuff
we just make
gone.
Him.
Yeah, exactly. We'd have to make them ourselves, but yeah, he's
and a. By the way, Kate, I think it should be Drunk Critter Massacre. I think that sounds.
Yes. Stop yes. giving people ideas.
Well, this is, that's what I well. Do, man. I'm an idea man.
I know, but you can't do it online where everybody can hear you, Paul. You know, that's the thing. That's how not Hollywood, but indie films even steal your idea. I don't know. But anyway, thank you, Kate. Thank you, Paul. This has been awesome. Thank you all for listening to our 100th episode.
Yay.
That's listed on the thing. Join us next week. I believe it's another one of mine. And then the week after that will be the 100th episode. And trust me, we have a good one for you guys because we already recorded it. And it's a good one. You know, I can't wait for you guys to see that one. So thank you guys so much. And everybody, have a good one.
Yay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.